Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Rates and Lanes podcast rides again on this Tuesday evening. We hope everyone is doing well. I want to thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to download the show and join us. We are looking forward to a really good show this evening. I think we're going to have a very interesting topic. They're looking forward to it. And if you guys might want to involve, jump in on the conversation, feel free to. All you have to do is press the number one. That'll put you in the call screener's queue, and we'll be able to try to get you up and on board and get you mixed into the conversation. But if you just want to sit back and listen, we welcome that as well. But without any further ado, we're going to start the show off as we normally do, and that is with this week's Trendlines report from DAT. With our first major winter storm event in the post-ELD era in the books, the impact on the truckload capacity was evident. As many carriers struggled to rebalance their networks last week, national average spot rates are around the same levels we normally see during the post-Christmas holiday break when many drivers take time off to be with their families. The 2021 polar vortex event created similar tight capacity, driving up spot market rates in the process. So let's take a look to see how those rates were performing over the different segment types, starting out with dry vans. Before I go into the rates, excuse me, I've been a little remiss in my duties. We have had an increase once again, which we all know with the storm and everything, another effect of the storm, the price of diesel fuel has jumped up by 3 percentage points, showing now that the national average price for a gallon of diesel fuel is at $2.97 per gallon. Now let's jump and take a look and see how those dry van rates were performing over the previous week. Starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have an outbound spot market rate coming in at about $2.23 per mile. Moving down south to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have an outbound spot market rate averaging at $2.32 per mile. Climbing back up to the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.73 per mile. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we have an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.18. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.36 per mile. Shifting gears, changing over to the flatbed segment of the report. Starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds at $2.53. Moving down south to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have an outbound spot market rate checking in at $2.68. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at a hefty $3.03 per mile for flatbeds. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.31. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, average outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.17. And wrapping up, last but not least, the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report. Starting out in the Northeast, we're showing average outbound spot market rates at $2.44. Coming down south to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, not much of a drop-off, but just slightly, showing outbound spot market rates for reefers at $2.40. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for reefers at $3.13 per mile. And coming out of the south central region, we're showing average outbound rates at $2.64. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing average outbound rates at $2.68 for reefers. That will wrap up this week's portion of the DAT report. Luckily, we do not have any more entrants to the list as far as the bad broker report. We haven't had any new entrants on this report since the first of the year, and that's a very good thing. So hopefully everyone out there is operating efficiently and not having any issues whatsoever with collections or none of that good old stuff. And so with that being said, let me go and jump and grab my co-host for the this evening, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing great. How are you, Rico?
Doing well. Had a little bit of a snafu, little hiccup, but a little blip on the screen with the truck. But, you know, this is trucking, so there's no crying in trucking, so we just have to suck it up and keep it going.
That's what it's all about. We're a pretty resilient bunch.
Exactly. We have to figure it out and keep it going. But I tell you what, you have managed to get us an interesting guest for tonight's show. Won't you tell us and the listeners a little bit about our guest this evening before we get ready to bring her up and on board?
Well, Don Shuell is the founder and CEO of a company called Cross Border Services, and she is an expert at everything to do with crossing borders, not just the Canadian-U.S., U.S.-Canadian, but also the Mexican, U.S., U.S.-Mexican border. It is probably the foremost expert and the highest regarded expert of anyone when it comes to a certification program that some of our listeners may or may not be familiar with called CTPAT. And I'm going to have Dawn explain that because Dawn is more familiar with this program than anybody else. And that's actually how I met her. I was introduced to her through somebody I know in the industry. And turns out she has quite an amazing history with CTPAT, as well as helping truckers when they get into problems. And one of the things we have to learn as truckers is not to have those problems. So to get not to let our guard down for a second today, and that includes making sure that people don't put contraband in trailers, or making sure our equipment and loads don't get stolen. You know, sometimes, and I've seen it before, where you have a small carrier that has a couple of loads stolen in a row, his insurance is canceled, and we certainly want to avoid that. So with no further ado, let's welcome Dawn Shuell. Dawn, good evening. Thank you for joining us on Rates and Lanes.
Hey, Chuck, how are you doing?
Well, we're doing great, and Rico and I are thrilled to have you on the show. There's so much to talk about, and there's so much going on. Every time I read transport topics, and lately I've been reading it mostly online, but I do, anytime I have a chance, to just take all my hard copies and read them from cover to cover and just glance at read the articles that pertain to us, I am seeing a huge uptick in bus where they have found contraband in trucks right across North America. It's not only when you cross a border necessarily. It can be you picked up a load somewhere in Texas or California heading for Ohio, and lo and behold, there's something on that truck that shouldn't be on that truck, and you didn't know it was on that truck, but I believe you're the master of that truck if you're driving it, and it's under your care and control. So I believe, for the most part, when that happens and they find contraband in a truck, even if the trucker obviously didn't know about it, I believe they seized the truck and trailer as well as the load. Is that not correct?
That's 100% correct. Unfortunately, it's not the same as policing. In policing, you're innocent before guilty. In cross-border, you are guilty before innocent. And if anything is, well, first of all, go back a second. This past year, with COVID going on, the decrease in border activity by just normal people like me and you crossing the border like we used to do for shopping for whatever, or going on a trip with snowbirds going down to Florida or whatever, that's not happening anymore because the borders are closed to all non-essential traffic, including transportation is all essential goods. So having said that, crossing the border, used to be every or 2 to 3% of every commercial vehicle crossing the border at any given point on any given day would get stopped for secondary screening. However, now it's 60 to 70%, and those drivers can get stopped for not necessarily they have anything in the truck, or they don't know, or maybe they do, who knows, but they'll get stopped if their documentation is incorrect, if there's a digit off, or their quantity, whatever the reason is, the officer hasn't had his cup of coffee, whatever, and he pulls them over. And yeah, if that driver is found with anything, even say he went across, if this paperwork says he went to Buffalo and he's going back into Canada and he has a carton of cigarettes, where'd he buy that? So he can get charged for that, which is stupid, but they do. Just any reason, any excuse right now. And then if they do find anything, because once they pull them over for secondary screening now, it can take anywhere from 1 hour up to 9 hours. And if they find, like one guy I was talking to this morning, they found 4 black duffel bags with pieces of wood that were wrapped in black tape. Why they were wrapped in black tape is beyond me and what that was about. But that was a 9 hour secondary screening. Driver had to find another way home, and all the tractor trailer were seized. And it's been, I think they got released this morning, but that would happen last week, because they had to actually search every inch of that tractor and trailer to make sure, because that to them is alarms for drugs, right?
Right,
so,
of course.
And so it's a really big deal right now.
And now my understanding is that there's been there's a lot more enforcement, even on the highways, with just stopping trucks in the U.S., more so in the U.S. than Canada, and just checking for contraband. And usually when I would imagine this happens, they've got the authorities have a heads up that, you know, truck number 407, that's a black Peterbilt driving on Interstate 80, has something in it. You know, somebody's been tipped off somewhere. And they're getting stopped, and it's not even it could be a load that originated in California heading for Ohio or New York. And I understand they're even, that's increased with the number of, I guess, because people are home, they're probably using more narcotics and things. That's what I'm guessing. Increased. And I guess.
Yeah, as far as getting stopped, and one thing I can recommend for any any Canadian drivers driving in the States, be it your car or a truck, always carry cash with you, because if you get a ticket for anything, your back lights out. $1,000 cash will go a long way, right? And I'm not telling you to pay off the officer. I'm just saying they give you a ticket, you pay it right now. Otherwise, you're getting hauled into the station. But there's billions and billions of dollars worth of contraband going around. And we know the majority of it originates in Mexico. And the point A to point B to point C from going from Mexico to Canada is going through the state. So they especially pull over Canadian trucks that are coming up, or there aren't really any Mexican trucks allowed right now because of stuff going on with politics. But the Canadian trucks, if they're headed northbound, they'll probably get stopped. And they actually, in the U.S., they can actually inspect your truck while you're on the road, that you can't do anything about it. Didn't used to be like that, but it is now. And then if they find anything, this is relevant. It just happened a few days ago as well. If you're a Canadian trucking company and you're carrying a load into Canada, you can actually get stopped at the toll booth before you get to the border crossing, and they can rip apart your truck there too. That's a new one on me. Didn't know that happened, but apparently it does.
That is set up at the U.S. toll booths looking for contraband in Canadian plated trucks heading back to Canada before they get across the border. Is that, okay. I would think a lot of times that maybe they're tipped off, and that's why they're stopping those trucks before they even hit the border. That's what I'm guessing. Because how would they
Could definitely be the case. There's also like wolves that drivers don't notice, but police will. There'll be a car that's been following somebody for the last 50 miles and the driver didn't know. They could be stopping them for that too. miscommunication or definitely reported. You got me on that one. But, yeah, definitely somebody probably tipped them off to be stopped at a toll booth. But even more so, like the Canada-U.S. border, there's a lot of drug busts and theft and all that kind of stuff. But the majority is the Mexican border. That is a really big deal. And I find that the majority of the bust coming into Canada, actually the loads originated in Mexico. They come up through from Mexico and they get put into a yard, into a secure or not secure, whatever, yard just across the border. Let's just say Laredo. And then right. A Canadian company or a U.S. company will go and hitch up their tractor to that trailer. And they didn't do their inspection. You're supposed to open up the back of the trailer. You're supposed to break the seal, open the trailer, do an 18-point inspection to the best of your ability. If it's full, then you do an SLC, but you can still do a 7-point around the tractor trailer. Put another seal on before you go because you don't know. But you're supposed to know before you go. And 9 times out of 10, honestly, that sounds bad, but it is actually 9 times out of 10. There's something in that trailer. So drivers have to be really super careful. Yeah. That's how high it's gotten.
Now, my understanding is that if that driver at the Mexican U.S. border breaks that seal, he's committed a huge no-no.
Not once crossed the border.
Into the U.S.?
Once it's gotten into the U.S. and USCBP has cleared that shipment, and it goes into the yard waiting to be picked up.
Right.
This is if that trailer's been dropped and it's being dropped into a yard. Then when the trucking company and driver go into that yard to pick up that trailer, it is his responsibility. He is supposed to. Now, I know there's all these different things going around in the trucking world, but by rights, he's supposed to, because it's his load. It's an SLC load, yes, and if the company, say he's carrying for General Motors, they're very, very strict about that stuff, and they'll put on the paperwork or let you know you're not allowed to touch our trailer. That's fine. So he puts SLC, he still does a 7-point inspection, and then when he does get stopped in the U.S. or at the border coming into Canada, we all know it was a GM load, and that's a more trusted load. Chances of that one having anything bad in it are probably very low because it's a General Motors load. But there's lots of other companies. There's tons and tons and tons of grower companies that are down there that are looking for carriers, right? And I'm talking legit growers, like fruit and vegetables that are, whether they come in from Ecuador and they need to go up through, whether they're coming through Houston from Ecuador or they're coming from into Mexico from Ecuador, whatever, they need a carrier. So then at that point, any of those other ones, when there's a drop trailer, you are allowed to cut the seal and inspect that because you don't know who's handled that. Like, you know, say this actually happened with a Walmart one a few years ago. The driver said, oh, well, I was told I can't cut the seal. So it was actually in Texas, just a state police stopped them. And so he ripped off the seal, all right? And it was full. There was supposed to be Walmart, like TVs and toys and stuff. And it was actually 100% full of marijuana bags. So.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Wow. So I have a question. One thing's not making sense. If it's a load that you picked up in Laredo, and it's going to Ohio or Atlanta or New York, then it's probably cleared customs in the U.S. if that's where it's destined. And I could see maybe the driver breaking the seal, and I'm not advocating that because I don't know it. Like, as far as I knew up until this moment, that was a no-no. So you're educating me, and I've only been in this business for 47 years in October. So I'm learning this tonight. But if it's a load destined for Canada, it would be in bond through the U.S. So that driver, would he still want to break that seal?
If it's a bonded load, it's been cleared by USCBP coming from Mexico into the States. And CBP generally will put, if it's a cleared load and they say, yes, it's 100% good, they'll put their own seal on it. That's the seal you're not allowed to break.
Right. Okay.
And And okay. If CBP has put their seal on, you're good to go. Don't touch it.
Okay.
But
okay.
Sometimes.
You scared. I got to be honest, Mark.
Yeah.
You scared the pants off me. I figured all these customs fines for breaking seals. I guess it's going to get real expensive.
No.
Okay. Now, the next thing I want to ask you about, there are opportunities there for a lot of carriers out there, and even small ones. And if and the small carriers, the opportunities may lie with doing work for brokers and sometimes with direct shippers. But my understanding from what I know is that there are a lot of large companies that really want CTPAT approved carriers in general, not just because of border crossing, but and knowing having best practices for crossing the border, but because those carriers have the best protocols in general. And when you're dealing with things like food, rather than just give it to anybody, they would much rather give it to a CTPAT-approved carrier or food, but certain engine components, things like that, whether you're Canadian or American, my understanding is there's huge advantages to being part of the CTPAT program. What's your view on that?
Yeah, when I first started the CTPAT, 20.5 years ago, right after 9/11 happened, because I was super passionate about what happened.
Right.
Back then, it used to just be, oh, it's a program. You slap. Actually, back then, you didn't even have to put seals on, but it was all fill out paperwork and yes, sir. All abide by these rules. But nowadays, it's not anything about that. It's if you say you want it, like General Motors or any, like I've got a lot of names if anybody's out there looking for companies that are in Mexico and want somebody to haul for them. But the reason that they want CTPAT is, number one, they're part of it. So part of the supply chain now is if somebody like General Motors is part of CTPAT, they have to use a CTPAT carrier, especially coming in from Mexico. There used to be this lackadaisical rule going, oh, well, you don't really have to. Now, realistically, if I would say Canada, U.S., if you really can't find a CTPAT carrier, you should. But if you can't, then you could use somebody else, but they don't want to. Because the heightened security measures of somebody like yourself, who's for all of your companies, that is CTPAT certified, you're also part of that program as the Canadian side is PIP, and then Mexico is also part of the CTPAT program. They have their own program too. And then there's the AEO, which means that all the countries around the world are part of it. So it's a selling opportunity, obviously, but it's also heightened security. So a company like yours has locks on all their, not just the trucks, but also your facilities completely secure. You have fencing and gates and cameras and lights. All the bells and whistles, and you're not joking about it, you really do, and Homeland Security will validate that, same with CSIS in Canada, and they have their own version in Mexico as well. The government will come out and validate the company every year. Now it's every year, it used to be four, then two, now one, just to make, right now it's virtual, just to make sure that you actually do have all those things, and if you don't, you're lying about it, you get taken out of the program. So it's a trustworthy program. So if I'm going to hire a company like your company, Chuck, and you're part of CTPAT, I know that your trucks are all equipped with all the seals and they've had their 18-point inspection, they're clean, your drivers have their fast cards. I don't have to worry about any of my product, no matter if it's a bunch of tomatoes or it's car parts. I know that my stuff is secure and it's going to get to the destination and nothing's going to happen. Chances of your truck hauling drugs is pretty nil, really, because you have a fast-carded driver who's gone through his criminal record check. Your company's gone through a criminal record check on all three sides of the border. If you're carrying for Mexico, Canada, and U.S., you've been cleared by all three governments. You have all your security measures in place. That's the biggest reason why companies want to use a CTPAT-certified carrier.
Yeah, I've noticed, like, we've gone in to see companies where we were hauling from Toronto to Montreal or, from Ohio on our U.S. side from Ohio to California or Ohio to Arkansas. And one of the questions that came up or comes up frequently is, by any chance, are you CTPAT? Because they give credence and they give ahead of, they push ahead of the line. It's not just rates the way everything else is, you will, there is that understanding that you CT pad carriers first, a lot of these manufacturers. And that's something that even if you're working for with a broker, if his customer or her customer is asking for somebody that's CTPAT certified, even if you have one truck or three trucks, it doesn't matter. The better, when you put that on your letterhead and you send that with your information to any good broker that knows what he or she is doing, you are going to get priority on your trucks. And I think that our listeners need that. Listen, this is not an easy business. Things have been a little better in the last 9 months or 10 months, but you know, we're watching fuel creep up, and of course labor has creeped up, and the cost of trucks has become very, very expensive. So I think our listeners need every single bit of help they can get in order to get better rates. That's what it's all about. And there's not a lot you can do in a live market except become better at what you do. Now, what does it take? Tell our listeners, for a small carrier, let's say somebody that's listening to this show that has five trucks, what does it take for them to become a CTPAT carrier? First of all, tell our listeners what CTPAT stands for.
It actually stands for Customs Trade Partnership Against Terrorism. It was brought out originally, actually Canada started it. Their PIP program, Partners in Protection, has been around since 1985. But when 9/11 happened, 2 weeks after that, and I was already working in customs at the time, and I contacted DC because I know people, and I was like, well, what program are you going to do? So they came out, they sistered the Canadian PIP one, and it's an anti-terrorism program. The whole thing, this all started, and terrorism isn't just what we think, blowing up, you know, the World Trade Building, which is absolutely horrific. But it's also got to do with drug smuggling, human trafficking, all that kind of stuff. And that's all versions of terrorism. So that's why the program came about. And I should backtrack just 1 second. I wanted to say, too, that another reason for getting into these programs, too, is the truck theft rate. I was looking this up before I chimed in with you guys. These theft rates since COVID, over 20, just in 2020, has gone up 107%. And it's a $30 billion industry right now in the U.S. of amount of theft, and in Canada, $5 billion. I wasn't able to get the figure yet for Mexico, but it's probably about $10 billion. It's huge. So that's another reason to do these programs, because part of the CTPAT program, so, I mean, anybody can call me at any time, email me, go on my website at crossborderservices.ca. I'll totally help you through it. Basically, I'm looking for security. So in order to stop this theft rate, in order to get the contract that you want coming in from Mexico or Canada, U.S., whatever, and you need to, I really think you need to be part of the program now. Times have changed. And if you want these contracts, because a lot of the big manufacturers, as we know in Canada, we lost a lot of that to Mexico because it's, you know, it's less expensive labor, obviously. But there's some really big companies down there, but they want secure companies. So what's involved? I'll help you through paperwork. You fill out a security profile. You need to know, like, do you have cameras? Do you have lights? What kind of cybersecurity? I have a cybersecurity expert that I work with out of San Diego. Do you have risking? Do you have risk management? I have a director of risking that's based in BC who can help me with that too. A lot of times, like, I have people, like companies from Mexico, and I speak a tiny bit of Spanish, but not enough. So I have really good friends that are with the Hispanic Chamber. So I can get help with that. Like, translating means a lot when it comes to a Mexican company, or even General Motors, having somebody like call up and go, oh, I need help with my CTPAT. I've been down there in Laredo numerous times training people. They drive across the border from Nuevo because I can't cross for obvious reasons. But, you know, then what I train them on what does it mean, train their drivers. It realistically, to become part of the program, it may sound like huge and, oh my gosh, it's going to take me forever. Realistically, I can get a company approved in anywhere from, well, I'm just going to give or take about 3 months. and just going through all of their security procedures. I mean, it's something that's a good investment for a company. It will help you with security. It'll help take your theft rate down, and it'll help you get the big contracts. Did that answer your question, Chuck? I feel like I ranted a bit there.
You know what? Now, I got to ask you one other thing. Let's just say we have a carrier listening to this on the line from somewhere in, in Georgia, where Rico lives, and he's got five trucks. And let's just say right now, he's got five trucks. He's got a yard somewhere down by Brunswick or Savannah, and he's got a unsecured yard. And he works out of his home because he's got five trucks. His wife does the dispatching and he does the trucking. What's the cost going to be for them to become CTPAT, roughly?
I couldn't really honestly. I'm not the kind of person or company that charges $150,000 for me to be part of the program.
No.
It's like way, way, way 100% less than that. So on the size of the company and how many trucks they have, bigger companies, the reason it costs a little bit more is because there's more work involved, right?
Yeah, of course.
If there's only five trucks, there's less work involved than realistically for me. I mean, it's virtual now, so they don't even have to. What I did before is just pay my travel costs to get down there, and I'll go through it with you. It's all virtual, so we don't even have that. And then I would recommend things like if you're not in a secure yard, like if there's drivers that take their trucks home, I have to ask them all those kind of questions. So it's the amount of time that it takes. I don't want to say a dollar figure, honestly. I prefer somebody to call me. But things like investing in kingpin locks, I can recommend if you're in a yard, but it doesn't have fencing or gates or cameras, and put a kingpin lock on. Have your tractors locked. Like, there's lots of companies. I have tons of customers in the state, and I drive in, and some of them are big, huge yards with fencing and gating, all the bells and whistles, and other ones, they're in this little tiny office, and all their workers work from home, which this is pre-COVID. Obviously, everybody works from home now. But pre-COVID, this is just the way they operate. And then where are your trucks? Oh, well, one's at Johnny's place, and then I got three over at that. See that donut shop across the street? I got three there, and then I got another one at Rebecca's place. You know, like, that's okay. It people think, oh, I can't be part of the program because of this. I would give them suggestions. Here's what you're going to do in order to become part of the program.
Okay. So it's not impossible for our listeners that run smaller trucking companies to get certified in the program. From the sounds of it, it's not going to be $20,000 or anything. It's going to be a lot less, I would say. And this will give them a chance. Now, I don't know about air freight, because I think that's a totally separate thing, but it certainly gives them a chance to strut their stuff in front of the larger brokers where customers are demanding or preferring a CTPAT carrier. And those customers understand that there is a additional cost for having that CTPAT carrier, but you know what? It's nice to have. And the other thing it gives you when our listeners are stuck somewhere, especially somewhere where they don't usually run or something is dried out, I believe the brokers will usually use a CTPAT carrier rather than somebody else, because it says a lot about how you run your company.
No, it totally does. And also for air freight and ocean freight, that does count as well. Air freight, air companies it's a version of the program, but all the big ocean freight companies, like if you're driving to pick up a bonded load or non-bonded load at a port, and it comes in on one of those big Maersk ocean freight truck or ocean freight liners, whatever, they're part of the program too. So it's a big, huge supply chain. If you picture this big oval, and it starts at the manufacturing, and then it goes down to, it gets manufactured in China, then it gets put on a boat. That boat, the manufacturing company is part of CTPAT, and then the boat is part of CTPAT, and then they get to the dock, and then the trucking company picking up has to be part of CTPAT to take the load off the dock. And then their customer that they're carrying for, who bought the parts, was General Motors in Mexico, and now we're traveling to Mexico with it, which for us, we drop it at Laredo and then however you work that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like a great big supply chain. And Homeland Security is really big on, in our version in Canada, PIP, and AEO is worldwide. They're all, and Mexico, they're all big on knowing that point A, point B, C, D, everybody across this whole oval circle in the supply chain is all part of it. Then you know you're secure. It's when when A and B are part of it and then C, D, and E aren't, then you go, uh-oh, that's your weakest link.
Yeah. It's like having half a fence, you know, on your farm, you know, in your barnyard. Well, the cows won't run away if they're in front of the fence that's in front of them, but if they go 10 feet away from where the fence ends, they're gone. It's the same thing. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Now, let me ask you another question. If we have carriers listening that are picking up loads in places like, let's say, California, or maybe they're picking up a load in Ohio going to Arkansas, you do hear about things going on in trucks that aren't on the bill of lading. And I realize sometimes drivers are not allowed onto docks quite often now. It's getting more and more. Before COVID, pre-COVID, it was because of security and liability. And post-COVID, during COVID and now, it's because of COVID, obviously. So you're picking up a load of 24 pallets of widgets. How do you know that there's not some sort of drug in there, or guns or something you're not supposed to be hauling? What best practices, what can our listeners do to prevent them being involved in this?
Because I'm helping mediate a whole bunch of situations just like this. And the biggest excuse now is, driver, you're not allowed on the dock because of COVID-19. So my biggest suggestion is for the driver to do his due diligence, have done that 18-point inspection prior to picking up the load. So he's signed off on that. He's crossed the border. He's sealed the trailer, so he knows there was nothing in there prior to going to pick up. He gets to his pickup point, and say it's in California. He's picking up a load for Sobeys or whatever, and they're loading in the groceries, and the dock guy says, oh, COVID-19, you're not allowed here. One instance, true fact, actually happened. The guy said to the driver, get back in your cab and go to sleep. And I'm just thinking, okay, driver, please tell me that you said no. The biggest thing the driver can do is say no. I understand I'm not allowed on the dock. That's your rules because of COVID-19. I have a mask on. I have my gloves on. I will stand back. At least if he stands back and he's outside the tractor and trailer, he can see what's going on around him. If somebody was going to drive up in a black SUV with a, which is what happened, beside the back of the trailer, and then gave them the drugs to throw in the back while the driver's in his cab supposedly sleeping, then he would see that kind of activity. The only thing he can't see is inside the warehouse where the goods are getting loaded. And then the other thing for him was when the shipper handed him the document or the bill of lading or packing slip or whatever it is, and he said, oh, there's 9 skids of polyethylene in here. But the driver can't tell if it's actually polyethylene because he can't see inside the truck. And that shipper insisted on sealing the doors. The other thing I would say for the driver is, this is my truck. I would like to seal the doors. Do not shut those trailer doors until I can take a quick visual look in. Then I will put the seal on. So then in that case, he would leave the trailer doors open, pull forward a little bit enough that he can take a peek in. And obviously he can't get in, but he can take a peek in. He can smell, and he can shut the trailer doors and put his own seal on. That's the only thing that I can suggest for that. But then when you get to the border, let the border guard know. I was told at the dock, cannot go to the dock. I cannot visually witness this shipment being loaded because of COVID-19. The shipper wrote that there's this on whatever's on the slip right now, the polyethylene, whatever. That's what I can go with. I'm just letting you know that that's what happened. That way, because this driver in particular didn't do that. And then, of course, when he got pulled over for secondary and everything hauled out, drugs found, blah, 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 The guard said to him, why didn't you tell me that this was the case? Because we would have treated this differently. So then there's a big investigation that went on for 7 months. They finally just got their tractor and trailer back. The driver finally got cleared. The thing is, you're guilty until proven innocent. So a driver gets arrested, equipment gets seized, load gets spoiled. You know, it's just a big mess. So everything that they can do, doing their 18-point inspection, putting SLC, doing a further 7-point if they can't get in, checking the paperwork. And the other thing he should have done is checked and if the shipper's saying it's polyethylene, whatever, and then he looks at the bill of lading, he was supposed to pick up, you know, 19 drums of vegetable oil. He's going, wait a minute. Hey, shipper, this isn't what I'm supposed to pick up. Meanwhile, the shipper's already gone in and shut the door. Now what does he do? So just crossing your T's and dotting your I's to the best of your ability, especially when you're a CTPAT company. You know the rules.
But even if you're not, Don, you brought up out of everything. I think the best point that you brought up that's the strongest is when you empty out, let's just say you emptied out in Reno and you were heading into Oakland or San Jose to pick up a load, the best prevention you have is to lock that trailer door, even when it's empty, and put a seal on, but certainly put a great big fat padlock that, you know, one that is not easily cut. And that way, nobody, you know, because a lot of these deals are, unfortunately, these instances are inside jobs somewhere along the line. Could be somebody working in a trucking dispatch, a brokerage house, the shipper, who knows? You know, it could very well, you just don't know. So you can't take any chances. And since you're the master in charge, as they used to say on the manifest, it's really important to keep that equipment secure as much as you can, and by making sure nobody has entry into that empty trailer, because these crooks can put something, you know, you go to the truck stop and it doesn't, you know, you park there on the back because there is no parking in front. And my understanding is these guys are pros and they can put a false wall in the trailer while the driver's having lunch. It only takes them a minute. And next thing you know, inside that false wall, because they see a truck from Winnipeg or Calgary or Toronto or Vancouver, and then they just follow it. I've even heard of cases where we had one client that was shipping computers out of California all over North America, and the gangs had infiltrated the computer company, and they were putting trackers in the trailers. The gang was, because they were working on the dock, and they were able to trace where these trailers were, and they were stealing them somewhere along the way. And it got to a point where the shipper had to take a whole bunch of other precautions, including one of the other things he had to, because we got to a point where nobody would haul his freight because it went for full value insurance, which was like $750,000. And he had to cover the insurance himself because carriers agreed they would only haul it for up to $100,000 maximum value. You know, and then there was another shipper, it was out of Texas years ago, and the rule was when you were handling those shipments, teams only, and if one driver stopped at the truck stop, to go to the bathroom, the other driver had to stay in the truck. And sure enough, according to the logistics manager telling me, these guys were being watched. And sure enough, guy would stop at the truck stop. The other guy was in the bunk. Other guy realized they stopped. He had to go to the men's room. He ran in, and they stole the truck. You know, these guys are way ahead of the game. So we have to realize that in this business, there are people out there that they're full of tricks, and they're waiting for us to just be, just to put our guard down for that quick moment. Don, how hard is it these days for carriers to become U.S. or Canadian bonded carriers?
It's not difficult at all. It's basically, I can help with that too. It's basically filling out forms for the various governments. you have to put up a bond amount, but that bond amount is just payable by your insurance company, and then you pay a small amount per year. So, like, say, for example, if you have one truck or two trucks for the Canadian bonding, you can do just a $5,000 bond. But, again, you don't have to come up with that. Your insurance company
right.
covers that. You pay $125 a year, whatever, for that. If you do a $25,000 bond for Canada, then, again, your insurance company puts it up. You pay, like, $400 a year. The U.S. is a little bit higher if you're a Canadian carrier. I believe it's I'm not 100% sure about this on the U.S. side if you're a U.S. carrier, but I think it's the same. But in the U.S., to payable to the U.S. Treasury is a $75,000 bond to become a bonded carrier. But, again, the insurance company pays for that, and then you pay it to the insurance company, whatever. And but in the there's not that same ruling for Mexico. As long as you're bonded, like say you're a Canadian carrier and you want to carry into Mexico, or sorry, you want to carry for a Mexican company, you have to be bonded in Canada and the U.S. A U.S. carrier
right.
has to be bonded in the U.S.
Okay. Yeah, you know, there are all sorts of opportunities for our listeners, and it doesn't matter whether you're domiciled in the United States or in Canada. If you're a bonded carrier, that means you can pick up freight off the port in New Jersey, let's say, or, you know, or the port in any of the ports throughout the United States and take it inland or take it to maybe it's going further for some reason. It ended up in New York, but it's going to Laredo and it's going for furtherance to Mexico. And for whatever reason, it's come in through New York. And there are carriers out there that do very well hauling those loads, and they're domestic. They're really a domestic U.S. shipment, but at both ends are one end is coming in from somewhere overseas, and the other end is going out to, you know, it could be furtherance to Mexico or, you know, another country just in, south of there in Central America, you know, Guatemala or something. So there's all sorts of opportunities. And there's not enough smaller people doing it. And because of that, this is where the big guys, the J.B. Hunt, Schneider, Swift, all those people, they use a lot of their equipment hauling that bonded freight because they have the bonds. And the truth of the matter is, it's complicated until you know it. You know, so is running a trucking business until you know it. And our listeners all seem to run those very successfully. This is just another area of the trucking business that so many of our listeners have never thought of. And the other thing that goes on, and Don, you may know more about this than I do. My understanding is that there are free trade zones throughout the USA where you could take that bonded freight that you picked up at a bonded terminal in New York, let's say, or in New Jersey, to a free trade zone in, you know, let's say in Memphis, Tennessee, and it goes basically in bond there, and it stays there until it's used. Do you know much about that?
Well, I'm not sure what you're meaning, like interstate or interstate doing that kind of thing, but I know that because of CUSMA, we call it CUSMA in Canada, in the States they call it USMCA, but because of that
right.
used to be the old NAFTA, but now because of that, that's free trade through from Canada, U.S., and Mexico. Not everything's
right.
100%. Like Trump had put in like a 35% embargo tariff on Canadian steel going into the U.S., but most
right.
but
right.
most things, I think it's like 98% of things are free trade in between. So
right.
if somebody's picking up something at a port that came in from whatever, say it came in from Mexico, I'm going to use that because I said CUSMA. If it came in from Mexico and for whatever reason it went into New Jersey port or Houston port or whatever, that's fine because it could have been a big load, hence why they would have done a ship. They can pick that up. It's a bonded load, actually regardless if it's bonded or not bonded, but if you're going with bonded and you're taking it across the states or into Canada or whatever, it's part of the free trade agreement, so there wouldn't be any duties or tariffs on it. Is
yeah.
that your question?
No, I thought there was, you know how we have, here we have the, we call them sufferance terminals. And my understanding is that of areas like that in the States where you take bonded freight where it sits until it's ready to be used for a group of manufacturers. So you'll have an area somewhere in Tennessee or in Ohio or Michigan where nothing is really cleared until it and you take it there in bond, and then they draw from there, and then they cancel the bond once they decide they're going to take delivery of that merchandise. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am, but I don't want to comment on that because I'm not 100%
okay.
Sure.
Well, no, you listen, and I respect that. What do you think the best opportunities for our listeners are that want to expand their businesses? And remember, our audience is primarily 1 to 10 truck operators. Do you think it's becoming CTPAT in that group?
Honestly, I think that's your best bet. I really do. I think that you need to beat the big guys. The problem with the big guys for me, and I apologize if there are any big guys listening, because I'm not trying to put everybody in the same hat, because not everybody's the same. I'm not trying to stereotype anybody, but some of the bigger companies, let's go with a really big company that used to be a courier that now does trucking and everything. You kind of lose, you've got so many people and so many branches that you lose control. And CTPAT doesn't like that. Neither does the AEO around the world, or PIP in Canada, or the parts in Mexico. They don't like that because you're too big. So I find when people are calling me asking me, do you know a carrier to carry, blah, 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 like Chuck, when I called you about that, whatever that machine was, that guy was making ice cream or whatever. So people are looking, they don't want them. He didn't want the big courier companies. He didn't want that because it's a lack of control. And I find even General Motors is like that. They don't want the big guys anymore because you never know what you're going to get, right? So I find the littler companies right now are the ones – littler? Is that a word? The smaller companies right now are the ones that are doing better, right? Because they care about the program. And they – you know, if something's gone awry or they don't know how to fill out a form, they call me, and I'm always there for them. I don't charge for a phone call. You know, if they need advice or whatever, if something happened with one of their shipments and a driver got pulled over for whatever, that's just a lack of training, and that's something that I can do. I have a course that I can provide to the companies, and here, train your driver. The course is inexpensive. They'll all learn that. But the bigger companies don't care anymore. They're like, ah, we're so big, it doesn't matter. We can cross the border and do whatever we want. And that's what all those wolf drug smuggler cartel people are after. They want those bigger ones. The chances of them throwing drugs into the bigger ones, because a lot of the ones I'm mediating right now are the bigger companies, because the drug smugglers think, oh, that's so-and-so. Nobody's going to check those shipments because they cross every single day. They're huge, you know? Where the smaller companies that care about this stuff, if you get CTPAT, you can go after those bigger, the Walmarts and the GMs and all that stuff that have stuff that gets made in Mexico and needs to get up here. They're going to give you the loads because you're part of the CTPAT program. And if you're going to go through and carry up into Canada, become part of the PIP because it's a sister program. And there you go. Bing, bang, boom. You've got your Mexico company, U.S. CTPAT, Canadian PIP. You're good to go. And you will beat out those big companies.
If nothing else, you know, it's places like Walmart quite often don't want to deal with a carrier one truck. It's just not a good use of their time. However, the brokers that they use, they will want to use a CTPAT carrier, so you're going to be number one to get any of those loads anyways at a premium. I think that's the big one. Is it worthwhile for our listeners to look at getting bonded, customs bonds for the U.S. and Canada?
Well, if you want to do that triple freight, the Mexico, Canada, U.S., yes. And if you want to take in bonded loads, and we all know that all the loads coming in from other countries all come in bonded. They have to, right? Because otherwise you sit on the dock forever, especially, you know, fruits and vegetables and even like purses that come in from wherever, the land in Vancouver, they come in bonded loads. So if you want to get loads, be bonded. You'd be surprised how many trucking companies that I know that aren't bonded. And when they call me, I think, well, why aren't you? I do understand that because of all, not because of COVID, but because of all the drug smuggling and money laundering going on, I do understand that the insurance companies have raised their rates, and I get it. But for bonding, I don't believe that that's changed. I think that it's still the same because it's a bond is a bond is a bond. So, you know, you go through insurance company, they may charge $200 instead of $100 now to carry that $25,000 bond for you. But in the end, yes, it's worth it.
Yeah. And you know what does happen an awful lot? There are opportunities, like, and you did mention Vancouver. You'll have a valuable load come off a ship in Vancouver, and purses is a great example. A lot of the expensive purses are made overseas in Asia, and they're not cheap. You know, I bought my wife one for Christmas. I don't know where it's made, but probably Asia, because everything is. And my understanding is, from what I've seen, an awful lot of this product gets off the ship. The people have already spent weeks from the time they ordered it until it lands at the port in Vancouver. They don't want to waste another 10 days on $600,000 or $1 million worth of purses so that it gets railed. They would rather spend, it's much better for them, to spend an extra $5,000 and get it expedited from Vancouver to Montreal rather than have it go on the rail, which is going to be a fraction that price, but it's going to, there's more handling involved and it takes longer. And they want their product. It's, you know, it's just too much money to tie up. So those are the advantages. And I'm sure the same thing rings in the States where product comes in. Now, I don't know how much domestic freight in the U.S. travels in bond, but I certainly know that a lot of it in Canada does, that you pick up at ports. It doesn't necessarily clear at the port. It'll still clear at a inland submarine terminal, especially a lot of that stuff that comes in from places like Asia and that's off the ships. So, you know, there's some great opportunities. Yes, Rico.
Chuck, I just wanted to jump in real quickly. I'm looking at the time. If we don't blew through it, wanted to give Dawn an opportunity to let people know how they can get in contact with her if someone was interested in maybe signing up and getting involved with her and her organization. So want to give open the floor for Dawn to be able to leave us with some information or any closing remarks as well.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And anybody can reach me at any time. I basically work 7 days a week because it's the nature of my program, and I never say no to anybody. I'm always here to help. I'm one of those good people out there. You can reach me, again, anytime. My telephone number is 905-973-9136. My website is porterservices.ca, and my email is dawntruel@gmail.com.
Dawn, thank you so much.
Right.
Go ahead,
Chuck. You're very welcome.
If anybody wants to get hold of me, feel free, give me a call. My extension is 203. That's really important. Otherwise, you won't get hold of me. Phone number is 905-875-0708. Again, extension 203. Or you can email me at chuck@traffics.com. Or you can send me a private message on Instagram at Chuck Snow CEO. And I want to just say a word. I want to thank Dawn again. And if any of our carriers want to learn anything about these programs, speak to Dawn. We utilize her for all of our companies, and she has just done an incredible job. She is one of my favorite suppliers, and I enjoyed working with her for years. With that, take it away, Rico.
We want to thank you guys for taking time out again for joining us on the Racing Lanes podcast. Could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us, and we're always eternally grateful for that. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to encourage you guys, be on the lookout. We're going to hopefully next week should have everything. I'm trying to have everything up and running. And we're probably going to try to make an announcement on the video production of the podcast. We're going to try to go switch over and start doing some video. So we can have a little video on there, show our ugly faces, you know, come off behind. You know, me and Chuck, we both got faces that made for radio. So that's why we initially started doing it this way. But I guess we're going to try to come out and do a little something different. So but with that said, we want you guys, ladies and gentlemen, to be safe out there. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. And God willing, we will talk at you guys same time, same place next week. God bless you and good night. Thank you again, Don, for taking the time out.
Thank you. God bless you guys.
Catch you on the flip-flop. God bless.